Daniel Browning here, filling in for Cassie McCullough on Life Matters here on RN. Like a stone that's dropped into a pond, domestic violence has so many ripple effects. A new program at the Royal Women's Hospital in Melbourne is working with pregnant women to protect both mother and child from further violence, because it's estimated that 20% of cases of domestic violence, would you believe, begin when a woman is pregnant. They have that again. 20% of domestic cases of domestic violence actually begin when a woman's pregnant. Now, Professor Louise Newman heads up the Safe Mothers, Safe Babies project. She's the director of the Centre for Women's Mental Health at the Royal Women's Hospital in Melbourne, and she's also professor of psychiatry at the University of Melbourne. Louise Newman, welcome back to Life Matters.
Good morning, Daniel.
Now, startling. I'm deeply surprised that 20% of domestic violence begins when a woman is pregnant. Do we know why this happens at such a vulnerable time in a woman's life?
Yes, it is a startling and quite a horrifying figure, really. And I think there are probably lots of reasons contributing to that. I mean, clearly some of these relationships have been in trouble, and the pregnancy might act as a yet another stressor that tips the balance, if you like. But then there are also some complex psychological reasons that some perpetrators of violence, who themselves are often clearly, you know, very vulnerable individuals, feel threatened by the fact that the woman is pregnant. Occasionally people describe feeling that there's no room left for them, a sense of competition with the baby, anger towards the woman who's thinking about the pregnancy and involved in other things. And of course, often fueled by other issues like drugs and alcohol, but a very high risk period for women.
So what we're saying is that the violence happens the first time in these cases, in 20% of cases,
yes,
where women experience domestic violence.
New cases of domestic violence, yeah, beginning in pregnancy, and clearly there are risks for the woman who's being assaulted, but for the developing baby, and that's of great concern.
And what are the health impacts? I mean, it boggles the mind to know that violence can begin at such a vulnerable stage of a woman's life, and you know, the child is also heavily implicated here. But what are the health impacts as far as you've been able to survey them?
On several levels, there's some quite large studies that have looked at the impact of having, which are often, sadly, repeated assaults on a mother, and often involving attacks on the mother's abdomen and so on. So there's an increased rate of fetal distress and sometimes miscarriage as a direct result of physical assault. So on that level, this is very serious. There's also the issue of stress. Women who are in these situations of conflict and ongoing assault and threats and a whole range of difficult behaviours are highly stressed. And those stress-related hormones, which we hear a lot about, but are actually important, things like cortisol, adrenaline, noradrenaline, they also have an impact on the developing baby. So they cross the placenta, they're inside the baby's system, and having an effect on the baby's neurological development. So these babies can have a range of poor health outcomes. So the babies of mothers who are assaulted during pregnancy are more likely to be small, there are higher rates of preterm delivery, and worryingly, these babies might have smaller head circumference, which really means that the brain is not growing at the rate that it should during pregnancy. And of course, we're very concerned about the long-term implications. So the damage of domestic violence is, yes, the visible, sometimes the physical, the bruises, and so on, but there's the hidden damage to the fetus and the psychological and emotional scarring that leaves for both mother and potentially for the baby.
So when a pregnant woman arrives at the antenatal clinic at the Royal Women's, what then? How does this project, Safe Mothers, Safe Babies, how does it work from that point?
Well, the aim will be to find, and we're researching this at the moment, the better ways of actually asking and identifying as early as we can those women who might be either experiencing violence or who are at risk, so where we have risk factors where things could tip the balance into violence. So we'll actually be asking questions around people's sense of safety. Do they have someone they could maybe, if they were worried about things, they could confide in? So some general screening type of questions. I think the importance of doing that in a general way and is that we want to build up trusting relationships with women so they feel they can confide or make disclosures of more serious matters if they want to. We want to maximise their opportunities for confidential discussion with a trusted clinician. And of course, most women who are pregnant do come to the antenatal clinics, not all, and sadly some of the very extreme risk cases will not be good attenders at clinics. But we're aiming to work with those women where we have a window of opportunity to actually get in there quite early, ask the questions. Sometimes, of course, people don't want to make disclosures. They don't feel ready to make disclosures or seek help at a certain time. That's fine. We have other opportunities across the hospital organisation to ask those sorts of questions. So the whole program is really aimed at much earlier and better identification, and then linking those women into the appropriate supports that they're going to need so that we can care for them better with these issues during their pregnancy and also when they have their baby.
I think once you've established the trust, then you have to kind of open up a conversation, and I think those questions need to be fairly open-ended. I mean, talking about more generally about whether you feel safe with your partner.
Yes. I think we start from the trying to establish if there might be some red flags, if you like, that mean that the clinicians and staff in a hospital should be better trained and able to recognise those warning signs and respond to them.
What are some of those? What are the warning signs? What are the red flags
several red flags. There are sometimes people give very hints, if you like, that something's not right. Oh, there are some problems, but I can't say anything more about that. Or I don't think I should say anything about what's going on. So immediately we think, well, something might well be happening, but you're not feeling able yet to tell us that. So important that we keep the doors open. Now, of course, there are sometimes people, women who present where there might be physical indications that they might be being harmed or abused in some way, and yet they still are not yet in a position to tell us. So we need to sometimes ask very direct questions if we notice any sort of physical issues, but being alert to women's mental health and their mental state. Women who are being abused and exploited are frequently highly anxious. They're often depressed. So having the skills to actually recognise some of these psychological impacts of violence is very, very important as well.
What do you think are the major barriers to that kind of disclosing to a woman, a pregnant woman, disclosing that she's in a violent relationship? What are the things that are stopping women from coming forward? You talk about that hesitation to even admit that there's a problem.
Yes. Look, I think there are several barriers, but I guess for many pregnant women, one of the major barriers in their minds at that time will be, what's going to happen to my baby? Does this necessarily mean that my baby will be removed, that I'll be seen potentially as being an unfit mother? And that's a tremendous concern. These are women who, despite the fact that they're in often very difficult and challenging relationships, they want to parent their children well, and they want to parent their children as safely as they can. They're highly motivated to do that. So there's tremendous fear that if the details of what their home situation actually is become known to authorities, then the involvement of a child protection response might not be helpful. I think we've got a lot of work to do in breaking that down and in making child protection a priority for all of us, but in a way that's not seen or experienced as punitive for the woman. who is in that situation. She's desperately trying to parent effectively. There are other people around her who, and particularly the perpetrator, who are the barriers to effective parenting, and yet the response that we have is often to remove the child. Now, of course, sometimes a home isn't safe for a child. But that's not always the situation. So we need a much more coordinated response where child protection is actually seen and mental health are seen as core priorities, and we work in a more comprehensive way to provide that level of support to give women the opportunity to parent in a safe and effective way as they want to.
So are the women who are experiencing violence in this way, are they also more likely to have complex needs? I mean, it's more than just the need for, you know, alternative accommodation away from the partner who perhaps is inflicting the violence. They have other complex needs.
Yes, they do. I think very pleasingly, particularly since, you know, in Victoria we had the Royal Commission and the increased awareness around of domestic violence around the country, the issue has been on the public agenda, and we've had some resourcing and looking at services to see how they can better provide things like emergency accommodation, better responses from hospitals, police. All of that is absolutely crucial. I think the other dimension to this is recognising that for some of these women, the situations that they find themselves in have become really so, in some cases, quite long term, that women in those situations are much more likely to have things like depression, anxiety, post-traumatic stress disorder. The evidence is very clear that there are very high rates of mental health problems in women who are in domestic violence situations. We also know, sadly, that some women are going to have problems with things like substances or alcohol misuse as a way of trying to manage themselves in a difficult situation. So the problems can be really complex. Some of these women also come, sadly, from families in their own childhood where they were exposed to or experienced violence and maltreatment. And what we're seeing in those situations is a terrible repetition of trauma. So the way that children who've been traumatised can literally grow into adults who can be re-victimised or traumatised. And that's a terrible vicious cycle of abuse. And what we're really needing to look at is the spectrum of those mental health needs and what can we provide so that these women and their babies have much greater flexibility and there are better options for their support.
Is there a point at which, for a woman who's experiencing domestic violence, at which you will direct her to other services? I mean, I feel that, you know, the services you can provide would be in some ways limited for someone who's in a crisis of domestic violence.
Yes, absolutely. No, we're not providing, if you like, some of that frontline crisis response through our particular mental health program. But what we have and what we need to have across the country if we're going to respond properly is an integrated approach. Some women need emergency services when they first present to a health clinician or a health practitioner or to a hospital emergency room. So hospitals need to have their own processes for the provision of legal advice, police and the whole process of finding emergency accommodation and support for women. That will, safety is of course going to be the priority in the majority of those situations.
And just quickly, how do we evaluate the success of the project or the program? Do you follow both mother and child in the aftermath of the child's birth?
Yes, well, this is going to be an ongoing research project, likely to be running for the next 3 years, and we're following both mothers' mental health. We're looking to see whether we can help women become less depressed, improve their self-esteem, and empower women to make decisions for themselves and for their children. We'll look at the quality of parenting, and we'll also be following the children because we want to see if we protect children from exposure to domestic violence, that we get better outcomes for them as well.
Louise, thanks so much for being my guest here on Life Matters.
Great. Thank you, Daniel.
Now, Professor Louise Newman heads up the Safe Mothers, Safe Babies project at the Centre for Women's Health at the Royal Women's Hospital in Melbourne. Daniel Browning with you here for Life Matters.